This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. More than 40 years ago, the album Free to Be, You and Me tried to get children and their parents to think differently about gender roles that had been traditionally assigned to boys and girls, men and women. In the past four decades, women have outnumbered men in higher education. They've become astronauts, have unprecedented opportunities in business and in sports. And so it would seem that our culture has come a long way in how we view women and girls. But has it really? Janesville writer Melissa Atkins-Wardy argues that girls in 2014 are dealing with societal expectations their parents and grandparents probably never imagined. Her new book is called Redefining Girly: How Parents Can Fight the Stereotyping and Sexualizing of Girlhood from Birth to Tween. It's basically a how-to, or a how-not-to, guide for helping parents navigate the current state of gender expectations in this country. Atkins-Wardy talked with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke about why there's such concern about what we're teaching our kids about gender.
Well, I think as far as we've come, we've moved backwards. So we have made great strides. You know, there are women breaking the glass ceiling, entering into careers like the NFL referee that you mentioned, where a woman has never worked before. And those are tremendous things. At the same time, when you look at girlhood, the only thing we're marketing to them are the lowest common denominators of femininity. And our girls are growing up with that idea that that's what it means to be female, unless parents are offering them other resources and other mentors and people to look up to. So, you know, it's tricky because you would think that, I mean, certainly I grew up in the 80s. And so I thought that raising my children at this time would be, we would be past all of that. And I think our culture is just as sexist as it's ever been.
Well, would you argue that the messages about gender are different today than they once were? Are they more insidious? I guess marketing has come a long way, just as
right.
Everything else has come a long way.
Right. So the messages about gender really aren't different. That has stayed the same. It's that the marketing is omnipresent, and marketers can now market directly to children. Like when you and I were growing up, we didn't have that. When marketing was deregulated in the 1980s, marketers, it was open season for kids, and kids became a consumer group.
So how much of this do you think, maybe we're jumping way forward in the message, how much of this do you think is basically about raising kids with better critical thinking skills?
I think that's a huge part of it because you can't block out culture and you're never going to be able to block out marketing, certainly not in the United States. So you need to have your kids being raised with those skills because you can't keep them in a bubble and you can't protect them. And what you have to do is instill your family values to them so that when these cultural messages come in, the kids use that as a benchmark and the messages either stick and stay or the kids weigh them and let pieces bounce off or stay in. And that way they're questioning what they're seeing instead of just taking it all in and having that be what's teaching them.
Well, let's talk specifically about some of those messages. And maybe a good place to start is when you first started to become aware of the messages that we're sending kids and their parents, really, about gender.
So when I became a parent, I didn't know any of this. None of this was on my radar. And I had a daughter in 2006, and she was named after Amelia Earhart. And so I was looking for a onesie with a girl pilot on it. They didn't make those. It was princesses, ballet, cupcake, you know, tiaras. That was it. Or these messages about being like a sassy diva, which to me just seemed like, why would I want my little girl to act that way? So I kind of became aware of it then, and I talked with my mom. She recommended some books, and I got into reading, and 6 months later, we were shopping for her first sippy cup. And I was in the aisles at Target, and there was a big row of pink princess cups and then blue cups that I think might have had the Toy Story characters on it, but that was it. Like, there were no cups that just had random childhood pictures on it, you know, sort of gender-inclusive colors. It was just pink or blue. And it just seemed odd to me. And then when we went over to the toy aisle, it was three rows of pink and three rows of blue. And that was my aha moment. Like, this is very, like, it's just sort of gender segregation. And I didn't think it would be like this for my daughter. And then you looked at the messages for girls. It was princess, fashion and beauty, or domestic cleaning. And for boys, it was everything else in the world. And I thought, well, wait a minute. I want my daughter to play sports and build things and do science and like dinosaurs. Like, those aren't boy things. Those are kid things.
Well, and if it were only about things like clothes and toys, it would be significant enough. But, you go on to write that these messages seemed like they were being reinforced by people that you might not expect to be reinforcing them.
No, yeah. I think my daughter was about 13 or 14 months old when we were at the pediatrician. And she'd been very – I think it was for ear infection. She'd been well-behaved during the appointment. And so he handed her a dinosaur as a reward. And it was green. And it touched her hands and her face lit up and she was so excited. And he immediately took it back and said, oh, no, no, you'll want the pink one. And I'm like, she doesn't even know her colors yet. Like she certainly doesn't know her gender stereotype. So let her have the green dinosaur.
At what point do you think kids are – I mean obviously, you know, when your daughter wasn't old enough to know her colors, you weren't having these kinds of conversations with her. It was essentially about modeling behavior. But at what point do you think kids are old enough to start understanding the message that you're trying to instill in them and having – explicit conversations about the choices that they make.
Yeah. So definitely with, you know, both of our kids, they're 8 and 5. We started doing this from the beginning. And it is about modeling and making sure that the clothing and the toys in home are, you know, rainbow of colors, all themes to build the best, you know, cognitive development and milestones for kids. So I think as far as conversations, we started about 2 when she started watching TV. And we'd be watching Wonder Pets, and which is a great show because you can't actually tell the gender of the 3 characters. And I know you're singing the song in your head right now.
I will say we actually managed to avoid Wonder Pets around our household only because it drove my wife crazy.
and so we would talk about that and, you know, Ming Ming or you know, we would say to Amelia, my daughter, we'd be like, oh, do you think she was very brave while she was saving the baby skunk or whatever? And just kind of getting her thinking about things like that, teaching her that she can interact with her media, that, you know, the messages that come from media aren't verbatim, that it's – we can question those things. And as she got older, it was things like, oh, you know, there's a bunch of boys on TV, but the girl on the side is being quiet. Like, she's not offering her ideas or she's not involved in the rescue. Like, don't you think she could be the hero? And just getting them questions like that. Just talking about things when we would see them.
There's a balancing act as kids get older, I would imagine, though, about when you start to talk about the appropriateness of consumer products and messages without wanting to inadvertently make sexualization seem appealing or you know, simply making your kids feel bad.
Right, or introducing them to concepts that they aren't really aware of yet. And that, you know, and that's the trick. And so some of the parenting adage that bigger kids, bigger problems. You just want to give it an age appropriate doses. So you could say to them, I mean, instead of going on this long trajectory of the sexualization, objectification of women and how that plays into the, you know, patriarchal bargain of, and your 5-year-old's gonna be looking at you like, what? I just wanted fruit snacks. So, you know, break it down and say, you know, that doll, her outfit's kind of skimpy and small, and it seems really tight. Like, do you think she can run around on the playground dress like that? And her shoes seem really high, and like she might be teetering back and forth. Like, would she be able to run fast? And that's going to compute for a 5-year-old because that's what 5-year-olds do with their day. So put it into language that they understand, and then you just continue to grow that message as your child grows.
You know, I'm sure there are probably people who are listening and thinking about this and they think, well, I had Barbies when I was a kid, you know, or I had dolls when I was a kid. And, you know, I turned out okay. I think I have the right attitude about gender roles. Is there something different about Barbies today and other dolls versus the way they always have been? I mean, you know, there were Barbies doing fairly unrealistic things as far back as the 60s and 70s.
Right. There were. Well, and ironically, those unrealistic things in the 60s were groundbreaking things like being a female astronaut. So Barbie then, I think, was actually groundbreaking and was probably a really interesting cultural phenomenon. But today she's different because, again, they can market directly to children and all marketers compress adulthood into childhood. And it's actually a term called kids getting older, younger. So Barbie is a little different. You know, I played with Barbie growing up. Clearly, I grew up to be okay. I mean, I've just written this book about the topic. And my daughter has Barbies, but she has mermaid Barbies so that we're focused on what they do as opposed to what they look like. And there's a lot of Barbies. You know, I mean, the brand is huge, so there's several different versions of the doll. But a couple of them just focus on fashion and beauty and dressed in a way that would be appropriate if you're going clubbing in Miami, but maybe not for your 6-year-old. I don't agree with banning anything from the home. So if you're going to have Barbie in the house, just be prepared to have some conversations with your child and pick Barbies that are, you know, maybe Barbie president or Barbie teacher as opposed to Miss Sassy Barbie that I should have brought with me. I have her. But, you know, she looks like she could possibly be a sex worker. So it's what lessons do you want your child to learn? Because every parent knows kids soak up everything around them. And an example that I use is for families who take their kids to church when they're young, certainly kids don't understand religion and all of its components, but you take it there so they soak it in, so they have a foundation. Well, it's the same thing for toys in media. Kids maybe not wouldn't recognize or be able to call out sexualization when they see it, but they're certainly soaking those messages in. And the research, all the empirical research behind this backs that up. And so parents just really need to be aware of it.
But having your kids on board with your own philosophy seems like only one part of the equation. How do you start to reverse engineer all the factors around you, whether it's the other parents that are throwing birthday parties for their kids, or it's the messages they're hearing from their teachers in school or their friends in school?
Yeah, you know, it's tricky because we run into all those – my family and the people in the Pigtail Pals and Ballcat Buddies community on our Facebook page, we talk about this stuff all of the time. And it can be tricky. I think what I encourage parents to do is speaking your truth. So just like you would say, I'm so sorry, my son has a nut allergy. We can't eat that. Or, you know, thank you for taking the time, but whatever. You have to just stick up for your children. And it's about health, right? These aren't just opinions or views. This is actually, you know, the sexualization and this body image stuff physically and emotionally hurts our kids. And so it's about speaking up for their health, just like you would if it were a food allergy or some other thing.
These are difficult conversations to have with some people, mm-hmm. however, because, you know, the difference here is if you talk about, you know, your child's nut allergy or whatever, it doesn't come off as a matter of opinion, where as you have a conversation with another parent about your own parenting style, it could easily become a question of, you know, what we value versus what you value.
Yeah, it can come off as judgmental, and you certainly don't want it to be. And I try to teach my community just to act with grace. And not everybody is going to have the level of understanding with media literacy that people would maybe after they've read my book or my blog and my colleagues' work for a long period of time. So I encourage people to meet other people where they're at. So you might be able to say, thank you so much for that birthday gift. We feel that doll is a little grown up for Avery or Rebecca. And so we appreciate the time that you spent with her. And she's actually really into finger painting right now. So we're going to, you know, and kind of replace what you don't like with something positive. And again, focus on the relationship that person has with your child as opposed to what they did, because we're not judged for our actions. We're judged by who we are, and kind of focus it that way. And at the end of the day, if the person gets mad at you, that's really none of your business. Your job is to raise your child.
You also argue for becoming the media you want to see.
Yeah.
What are you getting at in that regard?
So this one's huge. And for boys and girls, is that media surrounds our kids. It's like telling a fish not to notice the water. It's just everywhere. So you can teach your children to be the voice that you would want them to hear, so they can create plays and they can make up their own cartoons. I remember when I was little, we used to have this tape recorder and we would pretend that we were newscasters. Like, I think it was on Nickelodeon. It was not necessarily the news. And we would make these ridiculous, almost like Saturday Night Live type newscasts. And it was just about knowing that your voice matters or that your opinions matter. So whether it's, you know, whatever medium, whether it's pretending to be a radio host or a television reporter or a cinematographer, make your kids the media so they can have an old digital camera, a sketch pad, an old recording device to, you know, interview every adult they see. So getting them to understand that all of this content is created just by regular people, so that the movie they saw or the cartoon they're watching isn't this sort of amazing supernatural thing. It's just drawn by a bunch of men and women sitting at desks, and that's their job. And kind of peeling back those layers so that it becomes a little less mystical for them.
You mentioned that this is not just a message for girls. It's a message for boys. And really, as I read Redefining Girly, you know, the light bulb goes off, and this is – ostensibly a book about kind of reclaiming girlhood, but it's also just as much about boyhood.
It is. It so is. I mean, and, you know, like we talked, we both have a girl and boy in our families that we're raising. And so obviously the brother-sister relationship is impacted, but so it is with when they're at school and they need peers and they need cross-gender friendships are really important, especially in early childhood, because it helps you understand everybody as you grow older instead of keeping people as two separate, you know, groups. Like, the kids need to be intermingling. And what I tell my community is that when you spend a coin, you don't spend one side of it, you spend both sides of it. So what affects girls affects boys and vice versa. And you know, I hear a lot of parents of boys say, oh, thank God I don't have girls. But I look at them and I'm like, who do you think your sons are going to marry? Or who do you think is going to grow up to be your grandchild's teacher? Or these girls that we're not expecting much from, that we're raising pretty much to be real housewives, what are we missing out on as far as a country, that they could be amazing scientists and political leaders or titans in business? And we're only encouraging that from one half of the population.
Well, Melissa Atkins-Wardy, thank you so much for sharing this story with us, and best of luck to you.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
Melissa Atkins-Wardy is a writer who lives in Janesville. Her new book is called Redefining Girly: How Parents Can Fight the Stereotyping and Sexualizing of Girlhood from Birth to Tween. It's published by the Chicago Review Press. She's also the owner of a clothes and accessories company called Pigtail Pals and Ball Cap Buddies. Atkins-Wardy will talk about the book Wednesday evening at the Linden Sculpture Garden in a Boswell Book Company event. There is more information at wuwm.com/lake effect. From sugarcane to saffron, we'll travel the world with a drunken botanist next when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio. We'll be right back.